Welcome to the Consumerism Commentary Podcast. I'm Tom Dubek. On today's podcast, I talk to CPA Greg Wind about tax consequences for your kids' summer jobs. Welcome to the Consumerism Commentary Podcast. I'm Tom Dubek. Today's guest is Greg Wind, CPA at the firm of Wind & Stern, and also a member of the California Society of CPAs. Greg, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Now, Greg, with kids out of school for summer now, many teenagers are now looking for a place to work. Today, I want to start off by talking about the flip side of that coin. There are many parents out there who happen to own businesses and are thinking about bringing their kids on board to help them over the summer. Now, many parents in this situation may be tempted to throw their kids' money under the table, but there are some tax benefits if they were to bring them on as full-fledged employees. So what kind of income tax savings advantages are we talking about?
Well, the first one that comes to mind, Tom, is that the fact that that the child might be in a lower tax bracket. And if it's a bona fide working relationship, if son or daughter are really putting in the time in the family's business, then there can be an opportunity for the child to earn money, which might have been paid to the parents, and pay it at a lower tax bracket. And sometimes those tax brackets can be the difference between 35% and 10%, a difference of 25%. And that can be some substantial tax savings.
Okay, so now what is the kiddie tax, and how would someone avoid it?
Well, the kiddie tax is something that was born with the Tax Reform Act way back in 1986. That act changed a lot of the tax rules, and many of those rules still apply today. This is one of them. The kiddie tax is concerned mostly with unearned income, and I think this is a source of confusion for a lot of folks. What it says is that what it's supposed to do is discourage parents from shifting unearned income to their kids for opening up accounts in their kids' names for the sole purpose of it being taxed at a lower rate. So what it does is it gives the child the first $950 of interest, dividends, or capital gains tax-free, the next $950 at their lower tax rate, and anything above that is taxed at mom and dad's rate. So in a nutshell, the first $1,900 of investment income is treated differently than everything above that.
Okay, so how would bringing your child on board as an employee work in correlation with these kiddie tax rules?
Good question. Well, because salary is earned income, it's kind of out of the purview of these kiddie tax rules. So again, a bona fide employer-employer relationship would result in the child actually getting wages on a W-2 as opposed to interest or dividends that are reported on a 1099. And the child then, once they earn the wages, can decide whether to file a return or not. You know that most of us have a standard deduction and a personal exemption,
mm-hmm.
and I'm just going to use a round number. If a child earns less than, let's say, $5,300 over the summer in 2012, they might opt not to file a return because they wouldn't have paid any tax anyway in normal circumstances. And I can get into that later. But,
oh, I plan on getting into that a lot later. Yeah, that's a good one. We'll talk about that in a couple minutes.
But they can decide not to file a return. There are a number of compelling reasons to file a return. But up to $5,300, you can generally make a decision of whether to file or not.
So if a parent were to bring their kids aboard, what kind of savings are they looking at in regards to payroll taxes?
Well, they may end up paying the same payroll taxes, and in some cases they might end up paying a little bit more because payroll tax withholdings like Social Security have a ceiling. So I believe that this year wages of over, let's say, $110,000 are not subject to Social Security tax. So if mom or dad or mom and dad are making more than that, they might have already passed the ceiling and they're no longer having the Social Security withheld from their wages. Whereas if they pay junior, they might then subject junior's wages to those withholdings. Nevertheless, the difference in the income tax rate for that bona fide employee-employer relationship may still save mom and dad money, because if mom and dad are in the highest tax bracket, say 35% in 2012, and junior is in a 10% tax bracket, that's a difference of 25%. The 6.2% Social Security withholding would still make it an attractive proposition for mom and dad to hire junior in the business.
Right. So basically, you're taking that income, which could be charged to you at a higher tax rate, and passing it off to your kids as an employee as an expense, and therefore they would account for the income and be hit at a lower tax rate.
That's absolutely right.
Right. Okay, now how about tax-free fridge benefits for the employer?
This is an area that's often misunderstood and overlooked, the tax-free benefits. If you are an employer and you have somebody that works for you, a bona fide employee, you can provide that employee with up to $5,250 in educational benefits. That can be for almost anything. Even if I'm going to graduate school, even if I want to be a lawyer and I'm working on a law degree or I'm working on an MBA, it all qualifies. So up to $5,250 an employee can receive tax-free from an employer. I've looked into this, Tom. I don't see any restrictions that would come into play if it was a parent-child as the employer-employee, as long as it's a bona fide employer-employee relationship.
Gotcha. Now, as odd as it sounds, with kids as official employees, they can now celebrate their fledgling careers by immediately starting to contribute to their retirement, can't they?
An excellent point to bring up, Tom, is that if you want to contribute to an IRA, you generally need to have earned income. And if you're working in mom and dad's business and you're pulling a paycheck and you're getting a W-2 at the end of the year, you can actually make an IRA contribution. So if you did the math...
Which is what I'm sure the kids are immediately thinking about when they start this job.
Yes, the tongue firmly in cheek on that one. But I think if you do the math and you say, well, let's see, if the child takes the personal exemption and the dependency exemption, assuming their parents aren't claiming them as a dependent, and then the child contributes to an IRA, you can probably get up to about $10,000 before the child starts to actually pay tax. So mm-hmm. It can be an attractive proposition for parent and child.
That's true. Now, I guess you could, as a parent, maybe you could also coax your kids into maybe taking some of this new income and maybe paying for things that you would have otherwise paid for, like a college?
Well, that's an excellent point. I would venture to say that most parents, at least most parents that are clients of ours, finance at least a part of their children's college education. So an alternative to actually outright writing a check would be to have your child earn some of that tuition money by working in the family business, pay them a paycheck, and have them use those wages, if you will, to pay for some of their own college education.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a bad idea. I mean, even pay for their weddings, but that's probably pushing it a little bit too much.
But you have to aim high, right?
Yeah, right, yeah. Exactly. All right. Now, we understand we're talking about a rather small niche of people here, people with family businesses looking to hire their kids. So let's switch gears and talk about people without family businesses, but who have teenagers looking to enter the job market for the first time. Let's talk about possibly the single most confusing form a new employee is going to have to fill out, and that's pretty much any new employee, the W-4. So if you can, why don't you start off by explaining what the purpose of the W-4 is, as well as what withholding allowances are?
Well, all employees have the power, if you will, to control their withholdings. An employer is never allowed to decide how much to withhold from an employee. So an employee fills out a W-4 form, which in effect tells the employer how much to withhold. You can claim to be single or claim to be married. And you don't have to be married or single. It just affects the withholding.
Right.
But generally, if you want to have the most withheld, you would claim single zero. The exact way to do it would be to prepare a tax projection, figure out how much taxes you think you're going to owe at the end of the year, divide that by the number of pay periods in a year, and then back into the withholding tables, if you will, to have that much withheld every pay period. If you're a student or a child and you're just working over the summer, you might not have those same concerns, but you still might want to figure out how much you earn during the year or projected to earn, how much you're projected to owe, and then figure out how much to have withheld. You can also specify to an employer, I want $150 withheld from every paycheck, and they are required to follow your wishes.
All right, Greg, let's be candid here. I mean, I've been doing taxes for a couple of years. You've probably been doing them for much longer than I have. How useful do you find that worksheet for the W-4? Seriously.
But useful or necessary? Necessary because an employer needs to have one on file. Useful, I think people often underestimate or overestimate their withholdings, and then
right.
they don't realize it until next year when they file their taxes.
Yeah, I did that once, and like when I was working at a part-time job, and I looked at the worksheet, and I think I had come up with like married 7. Which, now, I know you know what that means, but the average person What that means is that the more withholdings that you choose, the less taxes you're going to be given to the government in your paycheck. So had I actually chose married seven, I would have wound up giving the government nothing, and I would have wound up owing the government when I did my income taxes quite a huge chunk of money. So that being said, I'm not really sold on how useful that worksheet is. I would definitely recommend talking to the person who prepares your taxes for a good idea of your situation and what you should actually withhold. But of course, like you said, it's necessary that it's out there. My own personal opinion of the worksheet is not so good. So that being said, what would you recommend to a child who's starting off for the first time what they withhold?
Well, you know, I would say that if a child expects to earn less than about $5,000, that they probably could claim married seven, even though they're not
exactly
married and have no children.
Mm-hmm.
It does seem kind of funny, doesn't it?
I agree with you.
But they probably don't have to worry about withholding because they probably aren't going to owe much tax anyway. But the employer is required to have something on file. But that's probably what I suggest for a child that's just going to have a summer job, maybe earn $4,000 or $5,000 over the summer. They probably don't need to be very concerned with withholding.
What do you think about single one? Because that's what I usually consider a safe bet for a kid who's probably not going to earn more than, like you said, you know, $5,800. And actually, I think the standard deduction for 2012 is $5,950. They've upped it. So as long as a child isn't going to make more than that, then, I mean, they really don't have to withhold anything at all.
Well, Tom, I'm going to wax philosophical here for a second. Dear old dad used to say, always claim single zero, because then you're likely to get a refund and you'll be so
right.
happy when you file your taxes. This CPA that you're speaking to here feels that the objective is to break even.
Correct, and that's the way I feel.
So I like to be a little more exact in figuring my withholdings.
Okay. So you're saying that you think single zero?
I probably would do a tax projection, which is what you alluded to earlier, to figure out exactly what I think I'm going to owe and then have that much withheld each pay period.
Okay. All right, then. And the reason I say single one is kind of, you know, well, it's pretty much what we're alluding here to. If you want to go for a big refund, single zero is definitely the way to go. But as Greg, I'm sure you can testify, you and I both try to break even because in reality, all you're doing by choosing to give more money to the government in your paycheck is they're just holding it for you interest free until the end of the year when they're just going to give it right back to you. So I mean, if you can make that money work for you, I prefer going more breaking even.
And Tom, I would be in agreement with you on that.
So if it was up to me, like Greg, I think you really nailed it. That you got to kind of figure out what you're going to expect to make for the, you know, over the summer, and then take it from there. If you're going to expect to make a lot of money, then you're probably going to need to withhold quite a bit more. Single zero is always a safe bet. I mean, you really can't withhold a whole lot more than single zero unless you actually start manually choosing to withhold more from your paycheck. And as a kid, you shouldn't have to worry about that if you're making, you know, $6,000, $7,000.
Well, and a child might not have their own tax advisor, although mom and dad might, that they could make a call to. But there, if you just Google tax calculators, there's some wonderful things available on the internet where you put in your wages and you put in your personal exemptions, standard deduction, or, you know, estimated investment income, and you can find out exactly how much or estimate how much tax you're likely to owe.
Correct. And you bring up another good point, too, is you don't know what kind of investment income they have and other kind of items that could be in play here. So, yeah, I would definitely – everybody, don't listen to me. Listen to Greg. He's the CPA. All right. Now, not everyone is going to find work as an official employee of a company. Some companies are going to choose to contract out their work. So tell us a little bit about the 1099 form and what that's going to mean to a kid's income taxes.
Well, 1099 essentially is a statement that you are an independent contractor. And as an independent contractor, you are responsible for your own tax withholding, if you will, or your own tax remittances. When you're an employee, it's easy. The employer does all the heavy lifting for you. They withhold taxes from your wages. They transmit those withholdings to the government. So everything is on account for you. You just simply have to file a tax return and claim those withholdings. If you're an independent contractor, it's a little bit more intricate because you're getting gross dollars. So if I get paid $20 an hour as an employee, after taxes, I might only be taking home $13 or $14. If I'm an independent contractor, I'm actually getting a check for $20 every hour that I'm working. And what that means is I have to be a little bit more conscientious in terms of figuring out my taxes. I have to prepare a tax projection, and then I have to actually, if I owe money, send in quarterly payments. And those quarterly estimated tax payments are due on April 15th, June 15th, September 15th, and January 15th. And there are underpayment penalties if you don't send them in. And it, the taxes on independent contractor wages ramp up a little bit more quickly than taxes on wages because there's an extra component, and it's called the self-employment tax. So in addition to any regular income tax you will owe on your wages, you will owe what's called a self-employment tax on your net income, and that's basically Social Security and Medicare, and that rate is 15.3%. So people sometimes think, oh, I only made $5,000 or $6,000, I'm not going to owe any tax. That might be true. They're not going to owe any regular income tax, but they still might owe that 15.3% on the $6,000, or in this case, what did that come out to? $900 in self-employment tax.
Right. I mean, a lot of times people take that for granted, being a regular employee, because your employer is paying half of that. So you actually get a nice little break there by being a salaried employee of a company, is because your employer is footing half of your Social Security wages already.
Tom, that's a good point. I just want to spend one more minute emphasizing what you said. If you're an employee, your employer is paying half of that 15.3% or 7.65%, paying half of your Social Security and Medicare. As an independent contractor, you're paying both sides of it. In fairness, you do get to deduct half of it. So the effective rate is a little bit less than 15.3%, but I think you still end up paying a little bit more as an independent contractor. It's important to mention, too, as an independent contractor, you're eligible for deducting expenses against your income. So if you work in an office and you're required to have a certain type of calculator and the employer doesn't provide it, or a certain piece of equipment and the employer doesn't provide it, you can actually deduct the cost of having to buy that so that you can do your job.
Right. Okay. Now, waiting tables at restaurants is also a popular job with kids. And that brings up the topic of tips. Now, what do kids need to know about tips?
Well, at a baseline, you're supposed to declare all of your tips. So at the end of the day, you come home and you might have only earned $12 an hour for working 6 hours, but in that 6 hours, you might have earned $150 worth of tips. Tips are taxable just like wages. A lot of restaurant establishments also allocate tips. So the employee will get an allocation right on their W-2. If the amount that you received is actually more or less than that allocation, you can show that adjustment on your tax return, but the burden of proof is on the taxpayer, and sometimes it's difficult, because it's all cash, to substantiate what you received in a given day.
All right. What kind of paperwork is involved with that?
Well, let's say I worked over the summer, and let's say I actually earned $1,000 in tips over the summer waiting tables, and the employer reported on my W-2 that my allocation was $1,500. I can attach a statement to my tax return to show that even though I was allocated $1,500 worth of tips, I only received $1,000. But the burden of proof would be on me to establish that. I guess one way to do it would be to actually deposit your cash tips into the bank every day and have a record of those deposits. That could be one way to substantiate it.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Now, what if you have some young entrepreneurs who want to set up their own summer business? What do they need to know?
Well, as a CPA that caters or services small businesses, I have a soft spot in my heart for entrepreneurs, and I think it's wonderful, absolutely wonderful, if a child decides to do that. If you set up your own business, I would strongly advise that if a child sets up their own business, I strongly advise a consultation with a tax professional, maybe even a lawyer, because you want to do things properly. If your municipality requires a city business license, if your county requires a business property tax filing, if you're doing anything.
And you know, mom and dad are going to be paying for all these consultations, too.
Yeah. But, it's really important to do things right, because when you have your own business and it's not incorporated, you file what's called a Schedule C. You're probably familiar with that.
Oh, yeah.
With your tax return. And the IRS will look to see that you have a bona fide business. And one of the ways to establish that you do is to show that you have a business license and you've done all the things that you're supposed to do as a business owner.
So what if you do have a kid who doesn't go through all the steps? And I know you've seen this a lot, too. We're talking about Schedule C's. Who, I mowed lawns over the summer, and I got, a few bucks here, a few bucks there. So I made about 4,000, well, I guess 4,000, 5,000, well, let's throw that out there, $4,000, $5,000, let's say $5,000 bucks he makes. through Schedule C. Is that going to make a big difference because of the standard deduction?
Well, the standard deduction is interesting because the standard deduction is something that we each own, so it's kind of automatic. The dependency exemption comes into play because mom and dad, if they're providing half of the child's support, which they likely are,
which more than likely are, right,
can claim the child as a dependent. And if they're in a higher tax bracket, that dependency exemption might be more valuable to them. So if a child is working, it's worth a conversation with mom and dad to see who's going to take that dependency exemption. The child can actually elect on their tax return to give away that dependency exemption, if you will, to their parents. They claim that your claim is being claimed as a dependent by another so that you don't double up and take the same exemption. But
right.
it's worth a tax plan to figure out which way is optimal.
Mm-hmm. And like you're saying, too, is that, you know, I've seen that as well, where usually the person in the highest tax bracket should be the one taking the exemption. And of course, that's usually the case with kids anyway. I mean, assuming that, you know, if you're paying for, you know, more than 50% of your kid's expenses, which you more than likely are, then by rights, you should be taking that exemption. That's just the way the law is laid out. So that being said, you know, we're talking about what people can write off for their taxes. And usually that exemption, that personal exemption, is combined with their standard deduction to find out how much they really have to make before they have to start paying taxes. So that's why in the case of kids, since the parents are usually taking the exemption, they're relying on that one standard deduction.
Well, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Tom, but that's so important. That's an important takeaway from this podcast, is that if a parent is in the highest tax bracket and the child is in the lowest tax bracket or no tax bracket, but just kind of automatically out of habit claims that the dependency exemption, it could be costing the parent in excess of $1,000. So it's really important to have the conversation and make sure that mom and dad aren't giving up any tax benefit, because they may just assume that if the child is filing a return, they should take the dependency exemption, but they don't have to.
Right. And you know what I've actually recommended to a couple parents too, is that, you know, I'd say, look, you know, if you're going to wind up saving $300 versus your kid taking the exemption, you know, go buy him a little something. You know, you take the $300 and, you know, just as a thank you to your kid, throw him a couple, maybe throw him $100. So this way you're both making out, the kids get a little something, and you want to get an even bigger tax break. You know, you can always work something like that out.
Right.
But I guess what I get back to my main point was, having a Schedule C, being self-employed, if you're pulling in $5,000 of income on that Schedule C and you're claiming $5,000, how much is that standard deduction going to offset it? Or are you going to have issues where the self-employment tax is going to wind up adding to that? You know, because if you're actually a regularly salaried employee and you only pull in $5,000, your taxable income is going to be offset by that standard deduction. You wouldn't have to pay anything. But I'm wondering if that self-employment tax now is going to affect it, be handled a little differently, in other words.
Well, and that's the potential surprise here, because the assumption might be, you know, between the standard deduction and the personal exemption, assuming the child's claiming it, you know, I made $5,000, I'm not going to owe any tax, which would be technically correct. But the self-employment tax kicks in, and on that level of income, could be somewhere between $600 and $700.
Right. That's kind of it's kind of a weird thing with kids. Like you said, we're talking about in this case here, they would really have to start making estimated payments if they did have a little side business. And even though they're not pulling a lot of money, that self-employment tax just could be enough for them to have to funnel a little bit to the government every quarter.
Well, and even something,
or at least for two quarters, you know, basically the months they'll be working.
Right, and even if they set up an IRA and pull down their adjusted gross income, that's great, but it still doesn't get around this self-employment tax.
Right. All right, Greg, well, I'm going to wrap it up on that note. I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom, for having me.
All right, that was Greg Wind, CPA at the firm of Wind & Stern, and also a member of the California Society of CPAs. You can visit Wind & Stern by going to wscpas.com. The California Society of CPAs can also be visited at calcpa.org. This is Tom Dubeck, and thanks for joining us in the Consumerism Commentary Podcast.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Consumerism Commentary Podcast. We welcome your feedback. Please email us at podcast@consumerismcommentary.com. To subscribe to the podcast or to listen to this or other episodes, visit us at consumerismcommentary.com/pod or search for Consumerism Commentary on iTunes. The Consumerism Commentary Podcast is hosted and produced by Tom Dubeck, Jay Frosting, and Luke Landis. The Consumerism Commentary Podcast was founded by Luke Landis.